Good afternoon. We want to talk a little bit about the Vietnam War. We want to talk a little bit about the Vietnam War this evening. And since we did a little bit of a presentation on Lyndon Johnson, you know, something to think about. The Vietnam War is a war that, after, you know, nearly 50 years since the end of it, we're still trying to come to grips with it. And next year, of course, will be the 50th anniversary of the Tet Offensive, this January of 2018. And, you know, it's a war that we still struggle with, because in some ways the World War II was the necessary war. It was a war that needed to be fought. Korea was a limited war. Vietnam also was a limited war in a lot of ways. Following World War II, the French will be given Vietnam back as a colony, and Ho Chi Minh and some of his freedom fighters, who had been guaranteed by Franklin Roosevelt that Vietnam would be free, only to see it go back to French colonial rule, had a big problem with that. And so they began to, with support from the Soviet Union and China, will begin to fight for a free Vietnam. Ho Chi Minh and his northern fighters, led by southern supporters known as the National Liberation Front, or later on Viet Cong, will create a situation in the South that will further help to destabilize South Vietnam, to destabilize the country. In 1954, the French will build a massive fort at a place called Dien Bien Phu during the Eisenhower administration. They will be soundly defeated. And what that does for the United States is it leaves the United States kind of holding the bag in Vietnam. A lot of questions about what to do. At the time, the United States had been sending tons of aid to the French in their colonial fight against the Vietnamese. And if memory serves me correct, they were, you know, paying basically 90 cents out of every French dollar that the French were using to fight the war. But after the fall of Dien Bien Phu, the country will be divided. And it'll be divided between North and South, with the promise that elections will be held by 1956. Those elections will never be held, because basically the Western powers, chiefly the United States, felt like that the country would end up going completely communist. And seeing Vietnam through the lens of the Cold War, that was just something that people did not want to see happen. So the United States will continue to, since Truman's time, to commit more men and material to stabilize what Americans understood as freedom fighters in South Vietnam, to stop any kind of spread of communism. In 1964, in August, there'll be suspicious attacks in the Gulf of Tonkin, North Vietnamese torpedo attacks in the Gulf of Tonkin. This will lead to something called the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution. And basically what this is going to do is give President Johnson an unlimited capacity to do whatever he needs to do, to send whatever he needs to send to fight the war in Vietnam. And what will Lyndon Johnson do? He will begin to order a massive bombing campaign of North Vietnam called Operation Rolling Thunder. Again, this mission is supposed to last just a few weeks, and it will end up lasting a lot longer. Who were the U.S. war leaders? You had Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara. Robert McNamara was the former head of the Ford Motor Company. He's an analytical guy. He's a numbers guy. You had William Westmoreland, who becomes commander of all American forces, MACV, Military Assistance Command, Vietnam. And for a little bit of the war, Lyndon Johnson feels like that, the war can be managed by bombing. There'll be more bombs dropped on Vietnam than in the entire European and Pacific theaters of World War II combined. That's a lot of bombs. But this is the way that Americans early on are hearing about Vietnam, through the Gulf of Tonkin resolution, through Operation Rolling Thunder. Eventually American troops will have to land in places like the port city of Da Nang, because American troops will be needed to guard the military air bases where the pilots are taking off on their bombing runs for Rolling Thunder. So in March of 1965, the same month of the Bloody Selma incident on the bridge, you will have Marines landing in the port city of Da Nang shouting, "Hot damn Vietnam." And, they want this time to be like their daddy's war in World War II. And they've all been told that, this is not going to last very long, how wrong these people were. It's very important for you to realize that the Vietnam War will be the first war fought on television. My father, who was on the East Carolina University swim team at the time, talked about how he could come home from swim practice and watch the war on television. And that was a memory still vivid in his mind many, many years later. From 1965 to 1967-68, one of the measures of whether or not America is winning the war in Vietnam is going to be the body count. And William Westmoreland will send his MACV soldiers out on search and destroy missions. On a Friday night at home, the news might cover the story of how many American casualties there were and how many estimated enemy casualties there are. And, the body count will be a sign of, who's winning and who is losing. So that'll be something pretty important to kind of think about. By 1967, you have the first major protest at home against the war. And it comes results in one of the symbols of the Vietnam War, and that will be napalm. And at the University of Wisconsin, there'll be a massive demonstration against napalm, against Dow Chemical, the company that makes napalm. By 1967, Martin Luther King is decidedly against the war. He opens up a magazine called Ramparts Magazine, and the center of the magazine is a expose on how napalm, this gelatinous gas that explodes and burns at a high intensity, how it has burned children. And even though he wants to support Lyndon Johnson, he decides that he's got to begin to speak out against the Vietnam War. He supports Lyndon Johnson because of all that Lyndon Johnson has done for civil rights, but he just cannot support Lyndon Johnson on the Vietnam War. He will go to New York, he will speak at Riverside Church, and then he will lead an anti-war march into Central Park. So by 1967... things are starting to heat up a little bit. Lyndon Johnson and the administration, by late 1967, is talking about how the war is winding down, that the war is winnable, and that there's light at the end of the tunnel because of all the people that have been killed. That will actually not be the case, because for months, the North Vietnamese had been... had been storing up supplies and running them secretly down in the south for a major offensive scheduled for the Vietnamese New Year, the holiday of Tet, for late January of 1968. You know, the Tet Offensive of January, February, March of 1968 will expose this credibility gap in American history, because Lyndon Johnson and William Westmoreland had been telling people that the war was winding down. In 1968, in January, the North Vietnamese, with their South Vietnamese counterparts, the National Liberation Front, otherwise known as the Viet Cong, will attack every major southern city. And although the United States will win back all its losses, the Tet Offensive will prove to be a media spectacle at home. It will prove to be a military win for the United States, but it will end up being a political defeat because of the war on television. Walter Cronkite, a CBS News reporter, will follow the U.S. Marines in Way City. Way was the old imperial capital of Vietnam, and the battle for Way ended up being an intense house-to-house fight. And when Walter Cronkite gets home in February of 1968, he will basically announce to the American people, and for the first time editorialize the news and announce to the American people, that the war is not winnable. And Lyndon Johnson, watching Walter Cronkite in the Oval Office, watching Walter Cronkite on television, basically said, if I've lost Walter, I've lost Middle America. So again, the Tet Offensive kind of exposes that credibility gap in a very big way. And by 1967-68, you have hawks versus doves in American society and politics. You have people who are for the war, that are hard-working, tax-paying Americans, and they believe what the government's telling them. And then you have doves, people who are moved by conscience to not support the war. And some of these folks could be nonviolent. Some of these folks could be very violent. And later at the University of Wisconsin, there'll be four gentlemen who will bomb one of the buildings at the University of Wisconsin because the building is tied to the military. And so, you know, it's a time when you could have domestic terrorism led by anti-war folks. You know, the Tet Offensive proved that the light at the end of the tunnel idea was not correct. And a lot of Americans saw during the Tet Offensive that there wasn't an end in sight, that the war was just going to go on. You know, by the time of the Tet Offensive, 50% of Americans supported the war, supported the president. After the Tet Offensive, that number will ratchet itself down significantly. You know, what were some things that were happening during the Vietnam War? At the beginning, if you were white and you were middle class, you could apply for a deferment. And a deferment meant that you could get into college and you could not be drafted, because by 1967, you're going to have the draft. Later on, Nixon will cancel the deferments. But early on, the war was considered a race war, because, you know, who's going to get drafted and can't go into college and get a deferment? You're going to have poor whites and poor blacks and poor Hispanic Americans. Nixon will later call the draft off. So today we know by statistically that more white men served in Vietnam as a percentage of population than other minority groups. But early on that wasn't the case. So one of the protests surrounding the war was, these deferments. If you were a draft resister, you might have gone to Canada. You might have just turned your draft card in. You know, there's this feeling that every draftee who didn't want to go to Vietnam burned his draft card, and that's certainly not the case. But, you know, there were just different ways to protest. Around this time of the Vietnam War, You have the Students for a Democratic Society. These were students who wanted to reform their campuses, who wanted to change things about where they went to school. And the Students for a Democratic Society will write things like the Port Huron Statement about how to, you know, fix some of the perceived problems of America. There were teach-ins about the war. There was picketing of the White House. Young people and people who disagreed about the war would shout, "Hey, hey, hey, LBJ, how many will you kill today?" Literally, the two daughters of Lyndon Johnson had to move their bedrooms from one side of the White House to the other because of the war protests. You know, there's a backlash against the anti-war people. Later on, we're going to see Richard Nixon during the Vietnam War, you know, infiltrate, you know, send the FBI and other government officials to infiltrate the student movement. In 1967, there was something called the Summer of Love, where, you know, hippies decided, hey, you know, we're going to go to San Francisco and we're going to practice love. There would be a free clinic, medical clinic, a free store, a lot of concerts by Jefferson Airplane and Janis Joplin and the Grateful Dead. But the Summer of Love ended up being anything but love. Drug use was rampant, crime was rampant, and also people at home began in greater terms to use a hallucinogenic drug called LSD. Well, as we said, the Tet Offensive will change a lot about Vietnam. In March of 1968, Lyndon Johnson will come on television and he will announce that he's not going to run again for the presidency. He's not going to seek election. 5 days later, Martin Luther King Jr. is shot and killed in Memphis, Tennessee. 2 months later, after that, Robert Kennedy, almost to the day, June 5th, 1968, Robert Kennedy is assassinated, accepting the win in the California primary for the race for the Democratic nomination for president. You know, if you'd lived through those assassinations, if you'd lived through the Tet Offensive, if you saw your president, you know, announce to the American people that he was not running again, that was a big deal. And Thomas Merton called the assassinations, called 1968 a beast of a year because of the assassinations. Well, the Democratic Party ended up being in turmoil because Robert Kennedy is killed, Lyndon Johnson decides not to run again, and the anti-war vote is divided chiefly between Eugene McCarthy and Lyndon Johnson's vice president, Hubert Humphrey. Hubert Humphrey, frankly, waits a little too long to come out and speak against the Vietnam War, and after the assassination of Robert Kennedy, Eugene McCarthy's campaign kind of flattened out and stalled and stopped. So that paved the way for Hubert Humphrey to be the Democratic nominee in 1968 against Richard Nixon. Remember, Richard Nixon had run against John Kennedy in 1960, and he had lost. And then he lost to Pat Brown in the California governor race and vowed never to be in a political election again. But in 1968, Richard Nixon is running as a Republican. He promises to have a secret plan to win the war in Vietnam, and he will be elected quite handily. One of Richard Nixon's plans to try to scale down the Vietnam War was something called Vietnamization, and that was the practice of bringing American troops home and letting the South Vietnamese army fight their own battles. You know, many parts of the South Vietnamese army did well in combat, but it's the fourth largest army in the world, and it's one of the most corrupt armies in the world. So, as a fighting force, it did not always hold true to training and the things that it could do. By 1970, Richard Nixon decides that the way to win the war, the way to win peace with honor, as the phrase goes, was to bomb the Ho Chi Minh Trail. The Ho Chi Minh Trail had been bombed before, but It's a trail that leaks out of North Vietnam, goes through Laos, goes through Cambodia, and back into South Vietnam. And so late April of 1970, Nixon decides to bomb Cambodia, comes on television and announces that, you know, the United States is not invading Cambodia, but they were sending troops across the border to interdict against enemy soldiers bringing supplies down the Ho Chi Minh Trail. Well, college campuses just erupt. And the best example is the shooting at Kent State that kills four Americans and injures up to nine. Other campuses had similar types of unrest, like Jackson State in Mississippi. And to solve this problem, a lot of campuses, the leaders on campuses simply just shut their campuses down. At Kent State in May of 1970, you had already issues in the town, and some of those issues in the town came over to campus. The campus administrators called in the National Guard, the Ohio National Guard, and in one day, in the midst of 13 seconds, you have 67 shots, and students are killed and injured. This was shocking for a country that thought the Vietnam War again was winding down. In 1969, 1970, the country had to deal with the news of the My Lai massacre, and also by 1971, the country had to deal with the Pentagon Papers crisis, where a gentleman by the name of Daniel Ellsberg, a Pentagon employee, had copied documents and released them to the New York Times, the so-called Pentagon Papers. There was a Supreme Court case called New York Times versus the United States, and the Supreme Court allowed the printing of the Pentagon Papers. So, you know, the Pentagon Papers suggested that in the early part of the Vietnam War, that body counts and different things like that were overestimated for effect. And so a lot of people began to, you know, if you're an anti-war activist, you said things to people like, "Hey, I told you so." And other folks began to lose even more mistrust in the government itself. The Vietnam War ends in 1973 with the Paris Peace Accords. And Richard Nixon will announce that there will be peace with honor. But one of the problems of the Paris Peace Accords was that North Vietnamese troops were allowed to stay inside South Vietnam. And, of course, that's going to be an accident waiting to happen. Richard Nixon did make special provisions, secret provisions, with the South Vietnamese government to say, "Hey, if the North, you know, further invades the South, we will come back in, we will help you." Of course, Richard Nixon will be caught up with Watergate the following year, 1974, and then after that, 1975, in the age of Gerry Ford, the South Vietnamese capital will fall to North Vietnamese troops. It will be the fall of Saigon. It will be one of the most embarrassing experiences in American political and military history, and that's something that we'll further talk about in an up-and-coming lecture.